Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research, and we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show. And it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
Ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen to it.
A new world order.
My name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
His name, Daryl Yamamoto. Daryl Hamamoto, welcome to The Real Deal.
Thank you, Dr. Fetzer. It's a pleasure to be with you here today and your audience. I think this is going to be a riveting, engaging conversation.
Well, we have so many interests, as I was determining, trying to overcome the technical obstacles that kept us separated today. I was mentioning to you how the frontman for Eagles of Death Metal, Jesse Hughes, has apologized for suggesting that the security guards at the Paris concert venue were complicit in the assault. He had told Fox Business Network last week that six guards at the Bataclan venue never came to work that night, and that it seemed rather obvious they had a reason not to show up. How can he take back something like that, Daryl? It's so obvious.
Well, I think somebody gave him an offer he couldn't refuse. Life or death.
Between lead and silver.
Exactly. As they say down in Latin America, plata o plomo. You either take the silver or we'll give you the lead.
Another outrageous event that occurred had to do with a Trump rally. A woman wearing a Trump T-shirt gave a Nazi salute. And it turned out she wasn't a Trump supporter at all. She was MoveOn. Her name is Portia Malengo, as I recall, and she runs the Twitter Women for Bernie Sanders. I mean, Daryl, how bad is this?
Well, people like that are certainly keeping the twit in Twitter, but these are ops, and I think maybe we can expand the notion of crisis actors to people like this, because they're popping up all over the place.
Well, I think that's right.
People like yourself and James Tracy have broke down what the modus operandi. So the public, except for my colleagues, the left liberal ones, they're not going to fall for it as much anymore. I mean, the news is already out that she was an operative.
And yet the media, Daryl, has been savaging Trump. I've never seen anything like it in my lifetime, and I was born in 1940.
Yeah, they definitely have an agenda to put him out, literally. So that tells me that he's for real. And even if they do manage to marginalize him or worse, what's going on now is a fundamental realignment of thinking in politics in American society. And they're not going to be able to, they meaning the corporate foreign media, are not going to be able to put that genie back in the bottle. It's too late. It's already out. He's made a statement. If he quit tomorrow, it's already too late.
I think those are wonderful words, Daryl. You have no idea how welcome they are to these ears. I really appreciate that because that's what I want to believe. So for you to be making that observation strikes me as a very powerful endorsement that that, in fact, has taken place. I mean, he's been the proverbial bull in the china shop. Right. He's been exposing how politicians are bought and sold, how the bankers and the news media are manipulated and controlled. And I think the attacks on him are a perfect illustration. Would you believe the last news story tonight before the big vote tomorrow is that a North Carolina sheriff is going to investigate whether he was inciting a riot when that older guy punched the young man who was being taken out of the rally, inciting right. a riot, Daryl.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they made it clear, his spokespeople, Trump spokespeople, said that this person had nothing to do with the Trump campaign. They can't be responsible for the actions of the people who attend these public rallies. But I don't know, maybe the sheriff also got the Eagles of Death Metal visit.
Message.
Yeah.
I do think
memorandum.
It's very troubling that Bernie Sanders is going after Trump and making outrageous statements. I mean, look at it this way. Trump's been informed that Move On, which supports Bernie Sanders, was involved in the protests. So he has suggested it was Bernie Sanders' people who were involved in the protests. Bernie Sanders, not knowing better, is accusing Trump of being a pathological liar, Daryl. Mm-hmm. That's just a bit much. I think it greatly weakens Bernie's moral standing when he resorts to claims like that, which he cannot possibly substantiate.
Yeah, I think he's also gotten a visit, too, because Bernie Sanders supporters are Trump supporters. They're potential Trump supporters. Most of them hate Hillary Clinton, justifiably so. You and I and your listeners, your viewers, your audience knows the backstory on Hillary Clinton and her hod carrier, Bill, her husband. And I think that's what's really worrying the corporatist media, that the Bernie Sanders people are going to realize that, hey, the Trump message is what we believe in, too.
That's right. I thought that the Michigan result was quite stunning and revealed the weakness of Hillary in relation to NAFTA, which was brought to us compliments of her husband, Bill Clinton, which he vigorously supported at the time, where Ross Perot warned us that giant sucking sound was jobs moving south, and where she has until of late been an avid supporter of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which will seal the deal as far as the New World Order is concerned, but put all of these Pacific Rim nations under the control of an international board of corporate attorneys who can override any statement, any law of any nation, including the Constitution of the United States, Daryl. I think the American people need to wake up and smell a coffee.
Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio?
Please leave your name and phone number.
Sorry.
That's no problem. Yeah, it's inevitable.
Yeah, speaking of coffee, Mr. Coffee, where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? Where have you gone, American sovereignty?
I know.
We're not going to give it up. We are not going to give it up.
I believe this is the reason Obama's become so hysterical about gun control, is he's worried that when Americans discover that he sold out our nation through the TPP and that we no longer have a constitution, that there are going to be a lot of pissed off Americans who might come looking for him.
Yeah, and they might be rank and file Democrats and Bernie Sanders supporters and Hillary Clinton supporters. I think if enough information gets to the ears of people such as this, they're going to be the ones who are going to be the most pissed off of all, because we already know. But once the Hillary Clinton zombies wake up or get woke, as her followers like to say, and stay woke, it's going to be big trouble for them. And we won't even have to resort to violence. We're just going to say, we're not going along with it.
And, of course, Hillary has been moving further and further to the left under the influence of Bernie Sanders. But you make an impeccable point, Daryl. Just as for me, if I were not supporting Trump because I think he's so sensational and can pack a bigger punch, I would be supporting Bernie. I mean, it's the two outsiders who are the threat to the establishment today.
Absolutely. It's just that the academic left and the so-called millennials, because of all the years of schooling, that there's their quick and easy solution will be found in a socialist utopia. They're still running on those fumes. But the message is very similar, and you're right. They're both outsiders. They're both political outsiders, although Bernie Sanders has been in professional politics for quite a long while by now. But they've both been on the margins of their respective parties. So the strategy, I think, is to, and I think I'm in a good position being in front of younger people, so-called millennials, with these audiences. I understand a lot of their popular culture. I speak their language. I understand their needs. And I'm not running for office, by the way. My job is to say, listen, why don't we just see what the commonalities are between Bernie Sanders and the Trump message? I think most of them are already aware that Hillary Clinton is a complete sleazebag. Completely.
There's so much that can be said against Hillary. I mean, including the emails, but she was behind the bombing of Libya. That was an idyllic society, Daryl.
Sure.
Omar Gaddafi was sharing the wealth of Libya with the Libyan people. They had a wonderful health care, public education. If anyone was hungry, they had a national warehouse where you could be fed. Crime was virtually non-existent. He was undertaking the Great Waterworks Project that would have turned North Africa into a veritable oasis. He was introducing the gold dinar. Neither Bill Gates, our Secretary of Defense at the time, nor Barack Obama were eager about attacking Libya, but Hillary promoted it. And when it was over, she boasted, "We came, we saw, he died." Now, that was very, very crude.
She's a natural born killer. Because we can take it back to Mena, Arkansas, when they were co-governors of that corrupt state, Arkansas, right? That evil spawn, that illegitimate spawn of the Rockefellers, Bill Clinton, out of Hot Springs, Arkansas. Once he got into the state house and was running that operation, that transnational drug running operation, people began to die. And Hillary was an integral part of that whole evil scheme with the Dixie Mafia and other groups as well.
Yes.
Barry Seal, Mena, Arkansas. The story's been told. It's there are documentaries on it. They go way back. And that history is available to anybody who cares to look on YouTube.
Roger Stone has a new book you may have seen entitled The Clinton's War on Women, about how Bill was a serial sex abuser. He was even kicked out of Oxford for raping a fellow student. But Hillary defended him and facilitated his actions by going after any women who sought to complain or make an issue of it.
Absolutely. She was part of the cleanup team. They had help. They had assistance. They were invulnerable. Maybe up into including the present time. We'll see whether Hillary Clinton is indicted and thrown into prison. Now, on that score, I have my doubts. I'd be satisfied if she just kind of exited the national stage and went into retirement with Bill Clinton and his library and their little foundation.
Yes. There's a mountain of evidence.
But to extend that dynasty, the Bush-Clinton dynasty, another 8 years, that's untenable.
The plan, of course, was that Hillary would run against Jeb so that the establishment would have a winner either way.
Exactly. It's like a bonesman running against a bonesman.
John Kerry didn't even contest the vote in Ohio in 2004. I was dumbfounded, Daryl. There were 250,000 votes that had yet to be counted.
Well, that would have been in violation of the secret handshake code that they took in the crypt.
It's all pretty bizarre, isn't it? And we shouldn't have anyone running, you know, who belongs to a secret society running for president. is outrageous, just as we should have no dual citizens in policy shaping or decision making positions, as we did on 9/11, where the Department of Defense was dominated by members of Project for the New American Century who were dual U.S. Israeli citizens.
Well, this type of covert secret skullduggery was already in process during the times of Washington and Jefferson. These great men were already beginning to warn us about the threat, the danger to this hard-won republic, this democratic system. And we let our guard down. And, of course, as you know your history better than anybody around. It was formalized in 1947. I mean, that was really the birthplace of the modern national security surveillance state, the assassination state. And fortunately, on the bright side, all this history, all this information is now available on YouTube for anybody that cares to watch the shows. You don't even have to go to college. You don't have to go to university. In fact, that's probably the last place you need to be in order to be truly woke.
What has happened to our institutions of higher learning, Daryl? I'm just utterly shocked when you have a James Tracy fired from Florida Atlantic and others, including yourself, harassed for doing good work, exposing what's going on in the real world. To me, it's simply appalling.
It's appalling. It's disgusting. It's anti-American. It's in violation of the Constitution. Direct contravention of the principle of academic freedom, which we have fought for. And, you know, granted, I'd say about 75, 80, maybe 90% of your professors with tenure are close to useless, right? We know that part. It's the Pareto law. 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people. And people like yourself, people like me who have struggled, and Professor Tracy, our good friend and colleague, we're not going to let them flap in the breeze. That's not going to happen. All right. He is going to get justice from Florida Atlantic University, and every single individual has been harassing him and making him and his family suffer to cover up their crimes, their criminality. People have awoken, and they're not going to get me either. They might get me in their limited sense, but in the long run, no. The truth is already out. I've written several books. I have a presence. I have an impact. My ideas are out there. I have my students. I have my soldiers. All right. And Linda Katehi is going down. She's the chancellor of UC Davis. Janet Napolitano, the president of the University of California system, she's going down. All their cronies are going down. All the vice provosts, all the corrupt deans, you're all going down. The world has changed, and you haven't changed with it. So you're just going to have to get a job at some sort of like the Mellon Foundation or the Rockefeller or the Soros Foundation and draw your paycheck from them instead of sucking the blood of the people of the state of Florida or the state of California, public education. That gravy train stops here. The exposure is open. You're wide open. You're naked to the world. Linda Katehi.
As one who was born in Pasadena, grew up in California, we had one of the great educational systems of the world at the time in the University of California system, but it seems to me to have fallen quite a lot under the influence of political corruption and political correctness.
Yes, and I'd have to say it started way back during the regime of Governor Ronald Reagan, and he was doing it in response to, again, this sounds like a very familiar scenario, and maybe this is orchestrated as well. In response to all these disgusting so-called, you know, self-styled campus activists, right? And we know a lot of those characters were part of some Obama-like psyops as well, right? We found that. Some of them had, you know, legions of useful idiots, but a lot of those people were from Bill Ayers type of backgrounds, with daddies who are presidents of large utilities like Con Edison. So they managed to shift the agenda to the right, towards the corporations, even though part of the master plan, according to Clark Kerr, was to make the University of California an adjunct, a handmaiden to corporate military America. It's really accelerated over the past 20 years or so. And when Janet Napolitano was appointed without any consultation of the faculty or any public discussion at all. When she was slotted in to the University of California as El Presidente, I knew that that was the beginning of the end and that my days were numbered. So all that did was make me intensify my message, exploring new ways of getting around circumventing the censorship, the harassment, the mobbing, the targeting by different Red Guards type student groups that have been sicked on targeted professors. Now, I don't know if our friend and colleague Jim Tracy has experienced that, but certainly that's been their MO at the University of California, Davis. And they use the student, quote unquote, community center in order to recruit these people under certain banners, GLBTQ, immigration, Sin Fronteras, whatever that might be, they'll rally them. And they're also heavily dosed with psychotropic drugs and electronic conditioning in order to set them loose, just like in the Soviet Union, just like Mao did with the Red Guards, the Cultural Revolution, on political dissidents. And I'm not a dissident. I'm an American restorationist, I guess you can call me. I'm just very, very vanilla in that regard. They want to see their little Bernie Sanders socialist paradise that they learn from professors who live in little podunk cowtown universities, who hang out with each other and are completely insecure about themselves and their accomplishment, their level of productivity. And they listen to these jerks. Believe me, I work with them.
I'm very impressed with your astute observation that once Hillary secures the Democratic nomination, all the Sanders supporters are with high probability going to gravitate to Trump and make him, you know, an irresistible force. I think that's extremely astute. I'd, of course, regarded Bernie as my second choice because he and Trump are both outsiders. Trump seems to me more direct, more forceful, have more experience of the relevant kinds. He knows the big picture economics inside and out. He knows the role of bankruptcies. He's forthrightly condemned the war on terror in the Middle East, where we squandered $4 to $5 trillion for nothing good for the United States. He's condemned the invasion of Iraq. I mean, these are all major, major positions to be staked out by an American candidate. And you notice he's the only one who's taken such an open and direct and forceful position on all these issues.
He's hit all the hot buttons that people such as us are interested in. And my students are also interested in some of these unanswered questions. And it may be trivial to some, but I think it's very important. He also said that if he becomes president, he's going to release those missing, 28 pages?
Of yeah.
11 report. Okay, because those pages there are really strike at the heart of who, what the hidden hand is.
Well, they reflect Saudi Arabian funding for 9/11. But yeah. We know, you know, that it was brought to us by the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. So that will simply be helping to round out the picture. But I think many Americans are going to be struck that a nation that, if we haven't regarded as an ally, at least as a friendly country in the Middle East, should have been directly involved. When the scales fall off about the complicity of Israel, Daryl, all bets are off.
Absolutely. And the fact is that Donald Trump has had some sort of cloak of protection thrown over his shoulders, and the fact that you have independent journalists like Wayne Mattson, who has published a book about the sword. I think it's called The Sword and the Crescent, which talks about the complicity of Saudi Arabia and Israel in this orchestrated demolition that was really the beginning of this totalitarian takeover that we're living through right now. So the news is already out. It's not like Trump is going to break anything new. He is, as a national figure who people are looking at and pay attention to, is going to confirm what independent journalists such as yourself have already figured out and have distributed to their audiences, which is much limited forum compared to what Trump has. And it's going to pass through the whole discussion about who really is the United States of America really a sovereign nation, or are we being wagged by foreign powers and bankers?
And of course, we know the reality of it, where Cynthia McKinney revealed not so long ago that when new members of Congress arrive in Washington, they're asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. And those who decline find themselves confronted by a well-financed alternative candidate, or discover that their voting district has been redrawn to leave them with no seat to represent.
Absolutely. Plata o plomo. The offer you can't refuse. But speaking of Israel, it's very sophisticated at some of the university campuses. And I finally figured this out a couple of years ago. I was wondering why some of these faculty people who I know and observed, and some of these student activists who are spewing all this anti-Israel rhetoric and pro-Palestinian, which, you know, I agree with, why they never seem to get in trouble. And I figured it out. They're being run by Israeli intelligence. This dissent that you're seeing on campus, which was big, it kind of died down recently, has been run by the same entities, which makes sense because, as we know from the Madsen book, Saudi Arabia, Israel, hand in hand for now, you know, they're working together. So a lot of what you see on campus, these social justice warriors, or these people at the Trump campaigns who are giving the salute, right? They're actors. They're not very convincing anymore, because you can see the whole what really happened at Sandy Hook or the Adam Lanza documentary on YouTube. Or you can tune into your show, or we can look at Real Politic and listen to Jim Tracy talk to experts, such as Halbig, right?
Well, it's very interesting you mentioned Wayne Madsen, because he's been revealing that the anti-Trump movement has been financed by George Soros, using organizations like Move On as his instrument.
Yeah, that's right.
And where, believe it or not, Bill Ayers was even on the streets in Chicago here recently. This whole effort to disrupt Trump appears to have been several weeks in the planning since they first learned he was coming to Chicago.
Well, it's a reunion for Billy Boy Trust Fund Ayers, who I think got his job at the University of Illinois, Chicago, through his daddy. Because I saw him in a documentary. There's like a little residence hall named after Pappy, who was the head of Con Edison. He probably gave him millions of bucks saying, will you hire my ne'er-do-well son, Billy Boy, in your school of education so he can teach Maoist rhetoric so that we control both the left and the right? So Billy Boy, wasn't he back in Chicago back in the days of rage?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
There's such continuity. See, this is why history is so important. These people are still in circulation. And now it's their time.
I think that the Trump supporters are only going to have their degree of commitment reinforced by all these attacks on Trump. But they are so ubiquitous, Daryl, from every news outlet, virtually without exception. I was very surprised and pleased. Sean Hannity pointed out that Trump was not, in fact, a fascist, that he was a nationalist, that he was a populist, and that he was a non-interventionist.
Well, I guess they had to provide some of their advertised balance. But, you know, it's still Fox. And Fox is what? Isn't it to a large degree Saudi-owned?
Right? I think that's actually correct. But
it's Uncle Rupert, right? Rupert Murdoch. And then one of some of the major investors of Fox are members of the Saudi royal family. I don't know if they're majority investors, but anyway, it's good that Sean Hannity is getting it out there. But who's listening? Who's watching Fox?
I go back and forth between MSNBC and Fox and CNN, so I can appreciate all the points of view that are being presented.
Sure.
And assess what's going on.
Sure, that's part of your job. But
I've been appalled where they took those couple of minutes from Trump rallies and they've endlessly repeated them. I'm reminded of when Howard Dean let out that whoop when he'd won an important primary, and then they silenced out all the background noise where it would have right. fit perfectly to make it sound like he was some kind of loon, and then they played it over and over and over again.
Right. They have their little tricks, their little production tricks, their editing tricks with the audio and how to frame these events. And I don't know, maybe I'm giving the American public too much credit. You know, I don't know, but I think a lot of people, except for people who are really sitting at home on the couch all day watching Fox News, I think most Americans get it. And certainly your Bernie Sanders millennials are not sitting home watching MSNBC or Fox News. However, they are watching Colbert and, you know, what used to be Jon Stewart. That's where they used to get out most of their news.
And both of them used
to cool, trendy, you know, Saturday Night humor, like, right. oh, yeah, you know, he's Trump's a fascist, blah, blah, blah.
Stewart and Colbert used to be such an important part of American culture with their very discerning satires and criticism of current political events. But with Stewart gone and Colbert having been preempted by being given the Tonight Show, things mm-hmm. I think really aren't the same.
Yeah, and those are the shows that the millennials watch, right? They're up late watching Jimmy Kimmel and that guy from Saturday Night Live. I forgot his name.
Does Kimmel pack much of a political punch?
No, he doesn't. No. Yeah, but you know, they're up late at night studying and Twittering and doing their Facebook and watching these shows in between trying to do a little, you know, minimal reading. But that's what the millennials look to. They think they're very cool. And they have the little music, you know, shows, a little guest, some fabricated, manufactured indie group comes on and they're happy.
Darryl, before we have to take a break and come back to some of your current research, I'm very interested in how you got into hot water with UC Davis. I mean, what is it they disapprove that you are doing? Talking about the truth of political correctness and corruption in the United States today?
Yeah, I think you summarized it right there. I go very deep. See, they hired me under the understanding or the assumption that since I do popular culture, what could be the harm in that? It'll make the students happy, you know, talking about movies and television. But that was never my intention. I always looked at the popular culture for its underlying message. It's sort of cryptic messages in the bottle that they're sending out there. I was talking to your producer Chance earlier, and he talked about as a younger man, he was listening to Sepultura, you know, back in 1992, and they were doing lyrics on the Rio conference, right, which is sort of the rollout of the Agenda 21 green male economy, right? So. But as he grew up and started learning this stuff, he was realizing that these messages were embedded there. He was getting a political education without him knowing it. So that's why I've been in musician, film, and music since then. Excuse me.
He's an unusually discerning fellow, I'm glad to say, because he does a terrific job with the shows and frequently is in a position to add levels of expertise about obscure subjects that exceed those of my guest, Darryl. So it's really wonderful to have a producer of his caliber.
Well, there's a reason why you two are working together. I mean, it's a good combination. And I don't know how old he is, but that's the generation I'm looking for, that sort of the post-college ones, because they're free of, you know, trying to fit in and being quiet when their supposed left progressive professors are spouting a bunch of nonsense. By the way, your audience should know that most of your left progressive professors who are spouting all this political correct stuff, they don't really believe it. They just use it as a way to get over. Melissa Click could care less. She just wanted to get tenure. She was an assistant professor. And academia is just stocked full of people like Melissa Click of the University of Missouri. They just want to get over, right? If eating babies became politically correct, they would be assistant professors who want tenure who are going to be promoting that. So that's the good news, because it's superficial. Now, if we put out the truth there. And if we show them that, hey, this is where it comes from. The university is an occult medieval institution that has been taken over by foreign bankers and corporations. And that becomes cool and that becomes trendy. And it becomes in. Then we begin to win. So that answers your question in a nutshell, why I'm in trouble, because I'm already making those inroads amongst my fellow, my colleagues, as well as the students. And they're worried about it. They're so worried about it. They had to take me out of three classes that were fully enrolled this winter quarter. They took me out of them. There was a one class of 50, an intro class, and two classes that had 20 students each. And this is after 2 years of systematically emptying out my classes. They had to hire this woman. They put her in the administration, the managerial, to defame me, to go on Facebook and Twitter and to go to students saying, do not go to Hamamoto's class. He's evil. He's bad. He's this. He's that.
That's truly appalling. I mean,
oh, yes.
You know, if the taxpayers knew what was going on, they'd be outraged. I mean, this is one of those cases when I think the public really would be incensed.
And your viewers who are parents who have college, university age, adult children or are about to be so, they need to get mobilized. Our conversation here, I hope it hits people who have to call junior and daughter to account. You know, you're there at the university to learn. You're not there to posture, to mau-mau people, to harass them. Right. I'm an educator. I'm a professor. I don't require any preferential treatment, but I do require the ability to practice my profession according to the Constitution, protected guarantees and the principle of academic freedom. Now, the problem is you have this highly paid, compensated plata o plomo administrators like Linda Katehi, whose hand is in the cookie jar currently. And, they have their enforcers who say, okay, get Hamamoto, get ABC, get Tracy, right? So we are just sort of the beginning edge of a full rollout, a national rollout, if we are not careful. This is serious.
Well, I think it's excellent you've been exposing the role of the globalist agenda because Hillary represents that approach par excellence. I think now that the Rust Belt states are catching on to her role with regard to NAFTA, that when she attempts to deny or repudiate the Trans-Pacific Partnership, she has no credibility, Daryl, because her rating on trustworthiness and honesty is appalling. And therefore, I don't think she can salvage her case. Once the working men and women of this country recognize that she was part and parcel of the destruction of our industrial and manufacturing base through NAFTA, and where the TPP would only carry it that much further forward, I don't think that there's going to be any going back to Hillary.
Jim, I'd like to agree with you on that. Unfortunately, you know about the electoral collage, right?
Oh, sure.
Or you're college.
Talking about electronic voting machines and the like.
Oh, they can steal the election. I mean, Bernie Sanders himself was complaining of the fact that Hillary stole these elections, right?
Some of them
once
already.
They go into a conference, they could steal it from Trump, from Bernie Sanders, whoever. The system itself at its roots is compromised, right? So that information needs to go out to the American public because they're woefully ignorant of the fact that it's not one man, one woman, one vote.
You're absolutely right about that.
They hijacked our popular vote power.
I have a mild optimism about tomorrow because there's been so much polling. Trump has had such a massive lead for so long in Florida. That looks to me almost impossible to steal. In Ohio, it seems to me there's going to be a turnout of blue-collar workers who are going to support Trump rather than Hillary,
right?
Rather than Kasich. And in fact, he's going to go down just as Marco Rubio is going to go down in Florida.
Speaking of Rubio, not to change the subject, but isn't there some sort of brewing sex scandal concerning him? Or is it Cruz? See,
well,
now Rubio's he's the foam party boy, right?
Well, Rubio seems to have had a history when he was a young man of being a gay hustler in parks in Miami, Carol, preying on rich white men, which is all very salacious. But I've had multiple reports about that. There's another that I think was originally a rumor intended to make him look better, that he was having an affair, possibly more than one, that was on the verge of exposure, where someone who had been his administrative assistant flew with him on 17 different trips.
Well, that sounds like Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin.
Yeah, I know.
People, Jim, these people are kinky.
By the way,
I'm working on an essay right now called As Above, So Below, right, which is their motto. And it's all about elite sexuality. I'm writing about Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Clinton and Air Force Bleep One, which they call, you know, and they brought these underage women, girls, really, to their little pleasure island, right? Fantasy island. This is routine. This is what binds them together. This is part of the system. The Jimmy Savile situation with the BBC, Gary Glitter, all of them are complicit in this larger military-industrial kinky complex.
Daryl, I couldn't disagree more with the administrators at UC Davis. You're a godsend to your students. They should rush to your courses. They shouldn't
know
a single word. Because you have one of the best minds for opening issues I've ever encountered, Daryl, after 35 years in higher education.
I have to agree with you completely in all modesty.
We have to take a break.
Jim they Fetzer, also don't get my sense of humor.
Special featured guest, Daryl Hamamoto, will be right back.
Thank
you. Less than 3% of you people read books, because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off and leave them off.
Now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
We'll be right back.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host, continuing my conversation with Daryl Yamamoto from the University of California, Davis. Let me mention, Daryl has a wonderful interview with Red Ice Radio. He does quite a few. This one's entitled The Dark Side of Asian American and Weaponized Political Correctness. I highly recommend it. Daryl, we were talking during the break about how Bill Clinton and Al Gore use the Fleetwood Mac song, Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, when they were campaigning. It had a wonderful effect, focusing on the future. I gather you've had some thoughts about a campaign song for the current Democratic candidates.
That's right, and I'm going to give you the exclusive here. I suggested they bring in this great band from the British Isles, since you know, it's the city of London that owns and runs America, right? From behind the scenes, at least to a large extent. So I thought they should bring in the average white privilege band from the 70s. Remember them? 1972? Pick up the pieces.
Was there a song in particular?
Yeah, pick up the pieces, because that's what they're going to have to be doing, picking up the pieces.
I love it.
Average white privilege band.
Well, Daryl, I thought
your name was average white band, right? Because they were all white, British, who were into funk.
Yes. Right?
This is before, these rappers, Vanilla Ice or whoever, but they were real and they were good and they were sincere.
Well, you sure do a lot with popular culture, Daryl, I got to say. I think they must have been blown away. They never expected you could do a searching critique of American politics and culture by way of popular aspects.
I mean, I can even break down what the real purpose of Furby is. You know, really? Furby, well, do you know what Furby is? Do you know it's like a little doll, an animal? I could have brought it here and shown it to you, but
tell us more.
It responds to your voice commands and it has its own personality and you can train it.
Is that supposed to be a model for the good citizen?
No, it's a model for artificial intelligence. And in fact, the social scientists, the behavioral scientists are already studying them. Jim, they're going to be our new spouses, our new friends. They're called affective or relational artifacts.
Relational artifacts.
That's right. That's the term, relational artifacts.
They're
experimenting with the children, and they're getting them acclimated to it. Furby.
Very disturbing, Daryl. Very
disturbing. See, I teach a class in sexuality, and I said, there is going to be no longer any conventional sexuality as we know it. I said, you may be into the whole GLBTQ agenda, but that's just a way station to complete non-sexual sexuality, mechanistic sexuality.
And, of course, those various forms of sex aren't reproductive, so they don't yield a new generation of offspring.
There you go. It's eugenics, techno-eugenics. That's the end game. And, plus, we're paying for it, the programming, the games, the video games, right, and the machinery, the accessories, while we're heading towards this path, this dead end, this evolutionary dead end. And only, of course, 10% of us will be allowed to live as to just keep the effective relational artifacts oiled, so to speak. You know, just sort of as a maintenance crew. And they'll keep us on as pets.
Another facet of the TPP, of course, is that you will no longer be allowed to label genetically modified food. So you won't know, for example, if it comes from Monsanto when you purchase corn, where Monsanto introduced an insecticide gene that yields a larger harvest. But Daryl, when it's fed to rats, within 6 months, they become sterile.
Wow. It must be a coincidence. I'm being ironic.
I mean, it's part
of the agenda. It's Monster Santo, and my institution in particular, University of California, Davis, is in bed with Monster Santo. They have a headquarters in our town. They moved it out to, you know, to a neighboring town called Woodland. But the University of California, California Agricultural School of Agriculture is considered to be the top in the world. Okay. So this kind of answers the question why I'm in trouble. Okay, that's big, big money, not just for the university, but to the investors that are putting the money through the system here. I am talking about the situation of Ignacio Chapela at the University of California, Berkeley, who's a biologist who did research down in southern Mexico, finding out that Monsanto crops were being mixed in with the indigenous Mexican corn.
Yes, yes, yes.
And he was stalked. He was harassed by Syngenta, who owns most of the department. They've given most of the faculty there, like 80% of them, full ride grants, right? So they own it. When I say they own it lock, stock, and barrel, I wasn't exaggerating. So if you have someone like me pointing out to students who are majoring in evolutionary environmentalism, which the vice provost of academics bills herself as a top mind in that field, then that's disturbing to them on a personal level, right? But it, on a professional as well as institutional level, I'm a threat on all three fronts there.
Well, because the Monsanto corn has adaptive benefits, farmers in Mexico are discovering they're harvesting Monsanto corn and have to pay a royalty. They didn't plant it. It simply wound up in their gardens and had advantages over the corn they had planted and drove it out. Well, it survived and they were obligated to pay a royalty. It's another aspect of the TPP, Daryl, that right. If a project that a corporation wants to undertake is not allowed to go forward because of environmental or protection, that the community that stopped the project has to reimburse them for the profits they would have made had they been allowed to go forward.
Well, these corporate attorneys that drafted this and the people who they had to pay off in order to push this agenda through, it seems like they have all the bases covered on that. They have us coming and going. However, you know about the principle of jury nullification. You know that we do not have to follow under wartime situations, illegal orders, right?
Yes.
Just because something was decided by a bunch of, evil archons who are in a closed smoke-filled room, that doesn't mean we have to obey it. And there are forms of passive, resistance that we can take.
But the American people have to understand that's an option. By and large, they're ignorant of their alternatives.
Up to now, yes. But shows like yours are changing it rapidly. And again, if we can get people to switch to the right channels on YouTube, you don't need MSNBC or Fox are out of the equation.
Daryl, I'm fascinated to see this. Some samples of the work that got you into trouble at UC Davis.
Oh, okay.
Which I used to esteem as one of the leading campuses in one of the world's great institutional systems.
Well, it's still good for the most part. Most of my colleagues, the professors, they're really, really scared. They're frightened. They're intelligent people, but they're people. And people aren't always courageous in situations that require courage. So I can kind of understand that. The best thing I can do is just to say, hey, this is where I'm at. This is what I'm doing. This is the situation. I know you can understand it. If you choose to run and hide, that's your option. But think of your family. Think of your children. You know, are you going to really allow them to inherit this desert, this GMO desert? geologically engineered, re-engineered environment, right? Are you going to allow your children to be sterile or infertile? Do you want that? Are you going to support certain agenda right now to make sure that you don't complain about it? I'm alluding to the GLBTQ agenda, so that you don't complain about it now so that they can implement it. Because these people don't care about any groups, gay, lesbian, transgender, queer. They don't care about any group. They don't care about black lives, nothing. They care about their 10% that they want to see live into the future. Now, are you seeing my graphic here?
Yes. You might want to go back a couple.
Well, this is just a picture of me with a pimp cup. You know what a pimp cup is?
No, tell me.
That's what the players in the hood carry around, you know, to get the ladies. So I'm just kind of sending a message out there. I'm a professor. But
what do they do with, how does it get the ladies?
Well, it's full of expensive California wine and money. This is dollar sign right here, right?
Ah.
Not dollar, dollar.
Okay, dollar.
So that's a pimp cup, and only the kids who grew up on rap and hip-hop will get it. My colleagues who are lame and stupid and out of touch won't. They'll say, I don't know, I don't get it. You know, what is that? But any student who looks, this is on my homepage, right?
Love it.
I'm not sneaking it in here. It's like my middle finger to Linda Katehi and all her little mini sub-regents. Right. And also my colleagues are so lame. So anyway, this is in front of Merak Hall. This is the egghead. See the Illuminati eye?
Yes.
This is pointing right at the office of Chancellor Linda Katehi. And I'm holding the little dollar bill here with all the symbolism. So this is pointed at all these sculptures are all over the campus. And they are an insult to students, to professors who are oblivious to the signs and the symbols that are running their lives. Research laboratory, there's one of these eggheads with its face shoved into a book. This is Arneson having a big joke on us, saying, you guys think this is education? It's not education. We're teaching occultism. Right. This is my very first published book, 1989, Nervous Laughter, about TV. Situation comedy, as I said, popular culture is very important for us to understand.
Tell us about the book. Tell us about the book, Daryl. I'm fascinated.
I grew up with television. That's my, you know, medium. And I always wanted to figure out, gee, what did it do to me? I knew it had such an incredible impact on myself and my friends and schoolmates. And no one was doing serious research. There was social science research, of course, to show you how to manipulate people through television. Some of them were Frankfurt School type people, right? Like a Leo Lowenthal. But I said, I want to talk about one genre, the television sitcom, which used to rule the airwaves from the 1950s all the way up to the 80s. And I did the first and only and still the best comprehensive study on this particular form, the situation comedy.
Well, it's an all pervasive cultural phenomenon. So it's terribly important not to be studied. I'm so glad you've done.
Absolutely. But you know what? We were talking earlier about your struggles on getting a job, right? Popular culture wasn't in back then because the corporations and the government and the military haven't figured out how to weaponize the culture, the popular culture, and turn it to manipulate the millennials.
What were some of the
I had a hard time. I mean, I was in the wilderness for several years trying to get an academic job. Because I was ahead of my time, just like I'm ahead of my time now, trying to introduce New World Order theory to the next generation of students. That's why they've taken me out of my classes.
What were some of the most important findings revealed by your research?
In this particular case?
Yeah.
Well, at this stage of my development, this was published in 1989, I still had some hopes that there would be reform that could be brought in. I didn't understand the nature, the scope, and the origins of corporate banking power. And in my next book, I had given up on that, saying that the next stage is to do independent media like yourself using various platforms to create specific types of entertainment. And that's my next book, which is Monitored Peril. This is about Asian Americans.
But nervous. Nervous Laughter,
yeah.
Daryl, you hadn't yet appreciated that the program was a commercial's way of having another commercial?
I had an indication because there was some research already being done on it. But I still thought, okay, what we need to do is bring in, you know, more variety, different types of scenarios, shows, writing, acting. Because as you know, in the 1950s, there was, you know, as far as blacks were concerned, there was just Amos and Andy, right? I don't know if you remember that. It was a
sure, rating, I remember Amos and Andy. Sure.
Okay, but now you watch TV, and it's heavily consumed by minorities, right?
Yes.
You see overrepresentation of blacks on TV.
Yes.
Is that an improvement? I don't think so. Because what are they watching?
In Nervous Laughter, where you're talking about shows like I Love Lucy or The Nelsons, you know, and...
I mean Ozzie and Harriet.
Ozzie and Harriet, yeah.
I love it. The 50s were the golden age. They were still, you know, Andy Griffith Show is kind of wholesome at that point. But now you watch sitcoms now. Daddy's, you know, he's a barista at Starbucks. And Mama's bossing him around and the kids are insolent and stupid, right? That's all part of the cultural engineering. They said, okay, we're going to, you know, they might have read my book. I'm talking about the social engineers and the programmers at Comcast. You know, or NBC, they might have read my book. Say, yeah, this is great. Let's see what we can do to weaponize it. Let's really flip these people up. I mean, they're already doing it back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, but it's really become, super strong strain of pop culture. The good news, of course, is that we know that more, kids are on video games than watching television. They're not watching sitcom. I don't know who is watching them, but television is dying and it's going to other platforms like Netflix, Hulu and original pro, you know, home box office has kind of knocked it out of the park for a while. And Fox is trying to catch up with their new shows. I don't follow it as closely as I used to. But I still think it's a really, really important. And I teach a media class, but I was supposed to teach a media class this quarter. And my big message was to turn off the corporate media and start making your own movies, making your own shows beyond selfies and beyond, the Apple band in a box, start learning how to play an instrument, right? My students, I get them out of my office, I take up my bass guitar, I plug it in for them, and I put it in their hands, and I said, play. And they all have to just play one note, and they can feel the music. And I said, this is the difference between music and MP3 experience. Which do you prefer? And they say, the bass.
The real
thing. I feel
it
in my body. It's vibrating.
Love it.
So I was going to do that in my media class. So we're going to make our own show. So they took it out because they want me to stay with the script. So then I did one on Asian American. By this time I said, hey, corporate America is not going to do anything. Let's start our own channels. Whatever interest, you know, you have. Asian Americans. Yeah. I talked about, you know, the representation, the misrepresentations from the 50s also.
Was this the idea of having an Asian American channel?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to call it Yen TV, you know, Y-E-N.
Mm-hmm.
And I even had a business model, Jim, on how to finance it. And I'll go to that right now. This might turn off some of your viewers, but, you know, relax. You know, sexuality is not that alarming. I edited a book here called Countervisions on how we're going to bring back an Asian American sort of a more diverse media landscape to do it ourselves, right? George Takei is an anomaly, right? I mean, he's been bought off currently, but Sulu is like the only guy we had back in the old days. So I started writing about this. And
Sulu, you mean from Star Trek?
From Star Trek, George Takei.
Yeah.
He's now a catch-all busybody and, you know, social media and whatnot. And he was a LGBTQ spokesperson for a while. You know, I guess he got tired of attending Comic-Cons or something. So as part of this book here, I started researching the idea of doing an all-Asian American adult film. So, of course, being the researcher I am, I had to go visit with adult performers. So I went to a signing at a store up in my local area, and I met the one and the only Asia Carrera.
Is that an adult movie store, bookstore
right now? It is, yeah.
I love it.
It's like it was the Comic-Con of its day. And they still, so I got a, you know, that Polaroid cost me $20, but that's Asia Carrera. She's a legend in the adult film world. And so I gave my pitch to her, left her my business card. So I was doing this kind of stuff. And I wrote in this anthology, the early one, a whole theoretical piece, Jim, on doing Asian American erotica. And this is a play on the word, you know, the Joy Luck Club. Remember that book?
Sure.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Right.
So I was teaching this all these years, and then the administration, you know, my colleagues were pissed off because I was having too much fun with what I do. You know, hanging out with adult actresses and writing about porno. They could only dream about it. So that was pissed off. But it didn't get the attraction of the administration. They, you know, because it was a different time. It was pre-Napolitano. So I kept on doing it, and one of my students here in this class where I used to teach this stuff said, I ran into him later, and he says, I want to do a documentary on your work. And so I did, and they made a documentary on me, 2003. It's called Masters of the Pillow, and this is about me making the very first all-Asian American erotic film, right? Because you don't see that.
And it seems to have won quite a few awards, Daryl.
It was screened, you know, I don't know how many awards it won, but it got me more notoriety. In fact, this got me on the Jon Stewart show.
You were on with Jon Stewart. That was wonderful.
Well, it was Samantha Bee, but it was shown on his show.
Uh-huh. Introduced. Uh-huh.
I didn't get to sit in the chair, you know. So how many university professors do you know? It got that kind of attention.
I love it.
On Jon Stewart. That's where all the kids get their news, right? My students said, in fact, some student, I was standing in line with Mark and said, hey, I saw you on the, you know, Jon Stewart. And I said, where? What? I said, I didn't know that. He recognized me. So that's where I learned about YouTube back then.
Terrific.
Masters of War. I do some serious work here. This is an anthology of militarism. Several years ago, and I did articles like this, Empire of Death, Militarized Society and the Rise of Serial Killer. I said the serial killing and mass murder is the civilian version of this mass warfare that we commit overseas.
It appears that the mass murders to which we've been exposed, or at least these events like Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, San Bernardino, and so forth, are all orchestrated events, staged events.
They're staged.
Yeah.
Yeah. They took the randomization out of it and said, hey, let's control this a little bit better. And my argument at the time was that it's part of the culture of death. And, my closing line was that there's a direct line, that connects, Ted Bundy. Remember him? Ted Bundy, the serial killer.
Of course.
There's a direct line that connects Ted Bundy with McGeorge Bundy.
With McGeorge, yeah.
Right, he was the Kennedy Johnson defense intellectual, right?
Yeah.
Who prosecuted the wars in Southeast Asia. So I said, that's a reflection of it.
He also seems to have had a role in setting up JFK for his assassination.
Exactly. There's William Bundy and McGeorge. They're come out of the same occult secret societies, and Kennedy was upsetting that. So my work in Asian American media got me some acclaim. This was shown on PBS called The Slanted Screens about Asian American men in film and television. I have a small part in there. It's a documentary. It was screened on PBS outlets back in 2006. And you can get the DVD now. And this guy's still doing films here. I think he's put his distance between me, Jim, because he's a high level government right now. He does these movies on the side, but I think he's put his distance between me because he's found that my work has had quite an impact that might be embarrassing to him politically. Anyway, this guy is at the University of California School of Law, one of the top 10 schools in the university. He's also a graduate of the University of California. His stage name is Jeremy Long. And he has his own website called
AsianSlong.com.
It's the number one Asian male porn site. This is like last year, 2 years ago.
Is this the guy right there with his tattoos?
This is the guy. He's all tatted up. He's got a really nice body, you know? Okay, this is not the type of people you see on, you know, 16 Candles, Long Duk Dong, or George Takei used to every once in a while have action roles. But most of the, you know, your Asian American guys in the media are just, you know, pissed on and disregarded. And so he decided he's going to change. But guess what? This is the kicker, Jim. This guy here, Jeremy Long, that's the stage name, said that he was inspired to go into this by reading my work. He read my scholarship.
I love it.
They teach my essays like the Joy Fuck Club. Yep. At the University of California.
I'll read it.
There you go. So he says, I did it.
Lots of things in this industry operate very opportunistically. I just happen to know some people who knew some people, which led to this. As far as my motivation, though, I would say it really began in an Asian American studies class at UC Berkeley, where we learned about the work of Professor Daryl Hamamoto, who had produced porn sort of as a research project. In those types of classes, we would learn all kinds of theories about the emasculation of Asian males in the media and things like that. But this guy, instead of just writing some paper about it, he was actually doing something in the real world. As an academic, he had a lot to risk and lose, and though it was ballsy as hell, and I very much admired it and appreciated it as a fellow Asian male. And when I was confronted with this opportunity, I just saw this as a chance to represent it. Also, I mean, I've always been a pretty ballsy guy myself, and doing porn is definitely the ultimate YOLO.
So there you go, Jim. You never know what impact you will have in your work.
Daryl,
just imagine all the people you're influencing right now in our conversation. So I'm writing this. I'm having too much fun. I'm having too much fun at the University of California, and these people want to piss on my parade. But they're not going to put me back in the concentration camp of World War II. Not the mental, not the electronic, not the pharmaceutical. I'm free. I'm sovereign. You can't touch me.
Daryl, you've had a most extraordinary career for an academician to deal with these issues.
Hey, listen, Jim, I was inspired by the counterculture of the 60s. I was inspired by the Beatles. I listened to the Paul McCartney bass lines. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? Paul is alive, baby. Paul McCartney is alive. Here's Henry Kissinger, the greatest living war criminal. Besides, you know, George Soros is giving him a run for his money, talking about depopulation. Dig it.
Yeah, Soros has been behind funding for the uprising in the Ukraine, the coup d'etat that occurred there for the
popular revolution
in Ferguson, Missouri. Yes. And now funding Move On to disrupt Trump rallies. This is a bad guy, Daryl.
Pattern. He's overshadowing Dr. Heinz Kissinger, right? Wasn't he a paperclip guy? The U.S. military and the Rockefellers found him, like, you know,
yeah,
and brought him into.
I wouldn't be surprised if Kissinger came in under Operation Paperclip, along with Wernher von Braun and a host of other Nazi scientists and intel experts.
Well, I understand in the U.S. Army, he was interviewing a lot of these people that they had to sheep dip and bring in. That's how they figured out, hey, Heinz here does a really good job, but Heinz sounds a little bit too German. Let's change it to Henry.
Yes.
By the way, his accent is completely fake because his brother speaks like you or me. So, okay, here's some of the shows I've been on. And I got it because I was against the immigration agenda of the University of California. They want to give reduced tuition to illegal immigrants, and they have a whole office set up there. And at the same time, they're charging students from China premiums, and they spend tens of thousands of dollars just to get prepared to come to the UC, where they get nothing. And this is part of the agenda to kind of break down the sovereignty as well. You know,
does it go back one? Does any of this have to do then with immigration from the Middle East, or is this all separate? Mexico.
Well, this was a few years ago, so I was talking mainly about Asian and Mexican immigration.
Latino, yeah.
Today it's mostly Chinese who are illegal immigrants, not Mexican. They have got all kinds of scams. So the deal that I'm anti-Mexican is not going to work because I'm Asian, you know, and it's other Asians that are doing this stuff.
There's even been an effort to target you as being anti-Mexican, anti-Latino.
You name it. Anti-gay, anti-lesbian, you name it. They've thrown it. And I said, that's, you know, that's just not going to work anymore. It just doesn't. So I've talked about this, and this is, you know, we were talking about TPP, the North American Union. You know, the moving of these populations to the United States helps the consolidation process, in addition to creating a new Democratic Party army, right? They want to naturalize them and get them.
You were talking with Alex about this, or
yes.
One of his?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in a more recent show, I talked about the University of California students in general, all across the country, are living in the electropharmaceutical gulag. You know, electro with the ELF and the EMF and the pharmaceuticals that they're on. That's how I got into my critique of Big Pharma. I was noticing, because I've been teaching about 30 years, I noticed the lights were starting to go off in my students' eyes, especially the young, vibrant, intelligent women. And I found out that they were on Prozac. I said, okay, let me check what are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors? And that's where I got in trouble, because I have a guy in my department, I'll get to him in a moment, who is the head of Asian American mental health. They have a mental health that's ethnically specific. This is how they weaponize ethnicity. And his goal, along with Big Pharma and the university, is to first label, create artificial syndromes, artificial mental illness. There's all kinds of literature, the critique of all this bogus mental health stigmatization process, and turn them over to Big Pharma. So I predict that we're already on the road to mandatory vaccinations in the state of California. There will be mandatory mental health testing and monitoring.
Well, and most of these vaccines are very harmful, Daryl. I mean, they're bad for human beings and other living things.
And I went on the local, I think it was the NBC affiliate here, and I criticized Dr. Richard Pan, medical doctor, who's affiliated with the University of California Medical School and the Medical Center. And I said, this guy, his campaign was paid for by Big Pharma. So I know the UC spies saw me going on public about Dr. Richard Pan. He's also a California state legislator who pushed through the assembly bill that makes vaccinations mandatory.
Yeah, I knew I'd heard that name somewhere before.
Yes, Richard Pan. He is.
How god awful is that? And how much was he paid off by the pharmaceutical industry to promote a bill that's going to make them billions for completely unnecessary vaccinations that actually don't promote health?
And harmful.
You transmit diseases and all kinds of harmful effects on those who receive them.
Yes, especially if they don't get the special batch reserved for the talented 10%.
For the elite.
Right, for the elite. They get the good stuff. We get the garbage. Just the same way with our food and our housing and whatnot. So this guy, Richard Pan, this is where I got in trouble, I think, Jim, is because I started criticizing other Asian Americans, right? Especially the people like Richard Pan, who I call servitors of empire. Okay, this is Stephen Chu, who was at the University of California. Now he was Secretary of Energy. He sold out the University of California to BP, British Petroleum. Here's, is that Neil Kashkari? I think so. This is Vikram Pandit, the Bandit. He's one of these high-level Citicorp type guys, you know, that type. This is Dr. Ho, David Ho, who is at Rockefeller University, who runs the AIDS franchise. And this is Stormin Norman Mineta. Remember his conflicting testimony for 9/11?
Oh, yeah. I got it onto Hannity and Combs twice in 2006, Daryl.
All right. My argument in this book is that the people who planned 9/11 put a Japanese-American, Norman Mineta, who spent his family and his self were in a relocation camp for Japanese Americans during World War II. He was there specifically, the timings, to reassure Arab Americans and Muslims that the same fate would not befall them. He assured them that that would not happen. And, of course, they start rounding them up left and right. So that's him, Norman. He has an airport. He's also one of the architects of modern Silicon Valley, right? He's his district, San Jose, California. This is Dr. Margaret Chan. She's part of the World Horror Organization, the World Health Organization. This is Chun Yu, right? The guy, the torture memos. Remember him? He's a legal scholar.
He's at California School of Law.
Yeah.
He said that torturing was constitutional.
That's right. under David, was it Addison or something? You know, the Office of Presidential Counsel. So that's John Chun Yu. You know him as John Yu, but for all these people, I like to use, if they have them, I like to use all three names. Just like Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, because it said, okay, these guys are criminals, unindicted criminals. And this is Viet Dinh, right? He's a legal scholar, so to, you know, supposedly, who was part of this neocon revolution. And there's Wendy Graham with her husband, Senator Graham. These are the guys that put Glass-Steagall out, you know, that protected the average investor. These are the people right here. And then who's this here? It's President, I know that's Obama on the right.
The guy on the right. Yeah.
There's Satara, but that's the president of China. I forgot his name.
Yes.
Chi-com. And we've been working, the U.S. government since the time of Clinton has been putting technology over there as well as industry. We know that. Okay. So I called out, Jim, my quote unquote, my own people, right? So that's the ultimate treachery. Because if you're black, you're supposed to give black people a pass. If you're Latina, you can't criticize them. It's all, you know.
Or if you're rich, you're supposed to give the rich a pass.
Exactly.
That's why a lot are furious with Trump and with JFK and Bobby before him.
Right. Because they broke the unspoken agreement that, you know, you're creating class suicide and treachery and traitor. So we have this guy here. His name's Daryl Wing Su. All right. He's a professor at Columbia Teachers College, Columbia University, where Barry Sotoro supposedly went to school for a while, which, you know, no one ever saw. And he is the guy. You notice the motif? These are all Asian American people here. All right. He's the guy that came up with this whole notion of racial microaggressions in everyday life. They write, you can see this in an academic article. They write articles about this that they put out there for the public policy people, and the foundations get a hold of and say, good, how can we use the concept of microaggressions and turn it against free speech? And how can we use it to control people? So get this. In my class in sexuality, they brought some snitches in from the student services center. They sat them in the back, and they tried to sweat me. They tried to intimidate me, saying that I was committing microaggressions against them for talking about certain topics, certain triggers were set off. These people
It's an analog of the phrase conspiracy theorist. If you're a critic of the government, you're a conspiracy theorist. If you make any corrective or criticisms of one race or another, you're committing microaggressions.
That's right. And it was created. It was just fabricated out of whole cloth by this jerkazoid. Now, he has like three or four brothers who are all in psychology, and they're all married analysts. And his brother, Stan Su, was the former director of my department. See, that's where it started to go wrong, because I started questioning all these labels, these pathologizing labels that people like his brother were trying to apply to us to make us seem sick and deviant and criminal, right? You know the process they did in the Soviet Union, right? They used to stigmatize political dissidents in the Soviet, well, maybe they still do, in the old Soviet Union and in China.
So now we are getting our variation right here in the USA.
Oh, yeah. Linda Cattei said that my penalty for speaking out and exercising my constitutional rights and academic freedom, she said she would reduce the penalty slightly if I submitted to psychological psychotherapy and psychiatric evaluation.
You mean you submitted yourself?
Submitted
yourself to be a
myself.
Patient?
Yes. They wanted to put me into the system.
How completely outrageous.
Yeah, so I would have
won. Then they'll be able to dismiss you as a clinically certified kook.
There you go. Or I'd come out of that place like Jack Nicholson and One Flew Out of
the Cuckoo's Nest. A zombie.
Exactly. So I said, I didn't even say no thanks. You got to be crazy, lady. Just because you're on meds, as I suspect, that doesn't mean that I'm going to buy into it. So there's a whole snitch culture at the university, not just University of California, and all the undergraduates who've been trained about microaggressions and safe spaces and trigger warnings and, oh, my identity, these are the Red Guards of the future. And now they're going to bring them in from overseas They're going to be so grateful to be at the University of California. They're going to do anything that they're required to do in order to run, to ride herd over us remaining civilians.
Daryl, I can see why you're so dangerous. You're blowing apart these new techniques and approaches before they have a chance to implement them.
Well, they're already pretty far along, but they're not really, really sunk in. We can still turn them around. Oh, yeah. And another part I heard, and this is probably, this really set off, there was like three or four GLPTQ type people who were sent to my sexuality class. And they were there to stalk me and haunt me and to intimidate me. But my whole argument was that the whole GLBTQ revolution, that was won a long time ago, because many, if not most of our great artists and thinkers and intellectuals are what are today called gay, right? But that was not the weaponized, politicized form that we're seeing today, which has nothing to do with protecting gays. It's just a matter of punishing people or creating a group consciousness to use against other groups. So you have your Tennessee Williams, you got Gore Vidal, a great book written by a gay, Truman Capote. There were like some of the greatest writers in.
Let me mention, by the way, that Darwin Porter published the best book ever on Marilyn Monroe. It's entitled Marilyn at Rainbow's End.
I have
and
that.
It gives you an inside view of all the key players in Hollywood, Marlon Brando, James Dean, Frank Sinatra, and others, and is the only accurate account of how she came to die, to live this world, and Bobby and Jack had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Goddess by Anthony Summers was the breakthrough book on this. But Darwin Porter, you know his writing style. He uses a lot of speculation and interior. Do you know him, by the way?
No, I don't, Porter? But I love him.
Because I want to visit him in person and interview. I think he's a really, really important writer. And the thing is, in academia, they wouldn't be caught dead reading these books, right? Oh, it's too salacious, too sensational. It's not scholarly. But to me, these are the people I learned from the best. I learned from Tennessee Williams. I learned from Gore Vidal. I learned from Truman Capote.
Well, his books, like those by Kitty Kelly, are copiously documented.
Kitty Kelly's another one. John Davis, who was related to the Kennedy. I have a whole huge true crime library and celebrity library and music and popular culture library that I draw from. And I bring it into the academic, which, as you know, it's very selective on what you can cite and what you can look at.
Daryl, this is fantastic. I love what you're doing. This is so important.
I'm sorry. I'm also arrogant and egotistical. So that's another strike against me. But, you know.
Daryl, I love it. I love it. I love it.
Hey, listen, I told the vice provost of academia, her name is Maureen Standen, who calls herself an evolutionary ecologist, right? So there's two fallacies combined in one. She says, I'm a scientist, Professor Hamamoto. You're going to have to prove all this to me. I go on facts and data. And I said, no, you don't. I said, you're over in the sciences. You're used to these little quiet oriental dudes who'll do anything they want. But I'm not it. You understand? That's what you have with grad students so that you can like run, make them do all your little lab work and you can take credit for it. I said, but I'm not it. You understand that? So that's her. So this is Furby.
Yeah, you mentioned Furby right at the start.
There you go. And this is, if I can say so, I have a channel called on YouTube. It's called Professor Hamamoto. And you can see my little Furby opening. You know, I'm opening a Furby for the first time because that seems to be really big on YouTube, like opening toys or bar, like 20 million views.
That's a fairly weird looking little creature, may I say.
I think this one was hacked. In fact, there's a whole group of people who hack Furbies, and which is good. They take whatever's out there and pop it. They make a Barbie into like trailer trash Barbie. You know, they hack the culture, like culture jamming. So again, people
trailer
don't realize
trash
it.
Barbie. So I love that.
Yeah, yeah. And then they break it down. They said, okay, these are made in China by slave labor and all that, you know. So it has like a political subject there. Yeah. So these are, as I mentioned at the top of this interview, they're called relational artifacts, children, elders, the complexities of cyber companions. So these seemingly innocuous toys are really products of cultural and social engineering and experimentation on the population.
That's a completely unwholesome looking little creature.
Well, this one was hacked.
I can't see anything companionable about that.
Most of them are warm and fuzzy. This one was played with, I think, by someone with a perverse sense of humor.
Yeah, that one looks sick.
It's demonic. But you know what? The ones that are really gentle and calm looking, they're also demonic too. You can't shut them off.
Huh.
So there's literature here. Here's my current nemesis here. She's on the take on various boards, right? That's how they make their side money, their side action. I think UC Davis is just her base salary. You know, it pays, it gives her some legitimacy to these people, but they buy her services. This is the real model of the University of California financing.
Now they've all become political players that have academic dressing.
Right.
Give them a position that ordinarily would deserve respect in society.
Mm-hmm. And in the old days,
subverting academic standards and corrupting our society.
Well, the professors and especially the students have become little more than window dressing for giant corporate scam boondoggles such as this. And this is going on all over the country. And I have to explain to students in my class, say, listen, try to get as much as you can out of here. Don't let the university use you. Use the resources here because this is a machine. It's a corporation. It's a company. It's an entity. And, of course, the student snitches are going to go back telling their therapist or whoever, and they're going to report it to Linda Katehi, and they're going to report it to Janet Napolitano. So who's the troublemaker? Oh, it's Hamamoto again. We thought he was just a clown before, but now we realize he was serious all the way along. So anyway, to wrap it up, okay, in order to help my struggle, I try different avenues. I contacted this group called FIRE, Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, and supposedly they have 100% success rate. And then I told them what my situation was at UC Davis, and I had to keep pestering them. I even called them up. I said, what are you? Are you guys a front for something? Are you a lint trap? Are you set up by corporations to divert dissent and to just sort of capture people like me so that I'll give up? And I didn't realize how accurate that was, Jim, because they sent me a letter saying, I'm sorry, we can't handle your case. Because the reason why they have 100% success rate is because they go for the low-hanging fruit.
Right. The trivial cases that are actually insignificant. I think this was
They'll write a letter to somebody. And
yeah, this was recommended for James,
our friend.
This was recommended for James Tracy too, and I can see why it came to naught.
That's right. That's why I'm putting it out there. Most of these organizations, these entities, these nonprofits that are supposedly helping you, it's quite the opposite. So FIRE, you've been exposed, and guess what? One of my Facebook friends passed on the information. And I found their book, and here's their financials. Contributions and grants, $7.2 million. Okay, and other income, you know, $250,000. Expenses, total, $4 million. So, hey, that's a pretty good profit there. Man, this is a really great scam.
And where are the contributions and grants coming from?
Ah, good question. Because if you go down further to this financial report, it's the usual suspects. SCAIF Foundation, all the way on down. These are major corporations. This group is what I call a lint trap. They're there to catch you as lint and dispose of you. And you run into them all the time. In the meantime, they're raking in big money from the foundations. And they're the people who head these entities are making pretty big bucks, you know, like on this level.
That's
academia, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
Daryl, in the time we have left, mm-hmm. I want just set the slides apart. I just want you and me to talk about this.
I want
your reflections about this political campaign. I want your thoughts about the candidates. We have four on the Republican side, two on the Democratic. Give me your assessment of what's really going on here.
Well, for the first time, and at least in my memory, I might even consider Kennedy as being authentic, because I think he had a crisis of conscience, and people like Mary Pinchot Meyer, who he dropped acid with and smoked dope with, and had a really deep relationship, man, you know, male-female relationship, changed his mind about war. Okay, but not since Kennedy have we seen someone like that, right? They've all been controlled or assassinated or tried, they tried to assassinate them. Trump is the first person to come along, the second person in my lifetime who is of that ilk, that of Kennedy. And I know Kennedy had a lot of problems, right? I mean, he, you know, so far as his own personal
sure. All his dalliances and
drugs. Yes, but, you know, he's a man. He's a human being.
Right. With all
Martin Luther King had problems. You know, we all
had. That's right.
But he didn't try to like, destroy the nation that he fought for.
Right.
He was a legitimate war hero.
As Jane Fonda observed, he wasn't trying to do the country what he was doing to other women.
That's true, yeah. Good old Jane Fonda. You know, I don't...
There's a cultural icon, Daryl.
Pardon
she's
me?
She's going to fall into your bailiwick.
Who's that?
Jane Fonda.
Jane Fonda with Roger Vadim. I think she was a little bit too young for him back then.
Yes, yes, no
he
doubt.
He was into Marilyn Monroe land and, you know, Judith Exner, you know, Sam Giancana's mole.
Right.
But I'm not going to compare Trump with JFK because the jury's still out. I'm not stoned
right.
Trump, as it said. I'll reserve judgment, but it's looking good for him so far as from what I can see. Electorally and so far as popular support, and I think a lot of Bernie people are going to, visit independent news websites and read up on it and find out that they're being used as well. And they're going to start moving over to the other side.
Especially as Hillary wins more and more states and Bernie falls further and further behind.
Right.
And it becomes more of tilting at windmills with Bernie, but many of his ideas are represented equally well, in some cases better,
mm-hmm.
by Donald J. Trump.
Exactly. I think their timing, the Hillary Soros advisors, they probably moved too quickly on Bernie by staging these assaults and the Hitler salutes and all that. They probably should have waited a little bit further into the election year, but I'm not going to give many ideas.
I think they were just panic stricken by Trump's successes.
That's probably it. That's probably why they need a preemptive strike.
They decided to go all out against Trump and try to demonize him before the vote tomorrow.
Right, right. But it's the election's not until I don't know when the convention is. It's quite a way off yet. But
oh, yeah.
I think they did panic and they pulled the trigger too quickly, so to speak. So
that's very, very interesting.
Yeah. So it's a really exciting time. I mean, the election is just part of it.
What's your thumbnail sketch of Cruz and Rubio and Kasich?
Well, all three of them are stalking horses. Hillary was the person that the banking and the international financier class wants to be in there. And they're there to provide the illusion of choice. We all know that Cruz is in bed with the bankers and the globalists himself, as well as his wife.
And, yeah, who works for Goldman Sachs and arranged for him to get $1 million loan at practically no interest.
Right. And we know that he's not eligible to be U.S. president. He should try being president of Canada. But again, I think that's why Barama was put in there, to try to lower those barriers so that we can have foreigners coming into high elective office.
Yeah. He was belittling Trump for suggesting he'd been born in Kenya when he was born in Kenya.
Right.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
We know the Frank Marshall Davis scenario too, right? Tales of My Real Father. And then you have these suspicious assassinations like Antonin Scalia.
Yes.
A member of a secret society. And who knows what kind of goings on was
St. Hubert at this obscure ranch.
30,000.
Catered to the rich and powerful in an isolated region.
Right. And he supposedly called off Secret Service protection during the time there. And he was found with a pillow on his face. And
well, one report we have is that he had his throat slit by a 13-year-old boy he was sexually abusing.
What's that again?
That he had his throat slit by a 13-year-old boy he was sexually abusing.
Now, is this published someplace? Or
Yes.
I'm behind the news cycle here.
Look up the book called A Rabbit Hole. You got to give the subtitle Satanic.
Oh, I have it.
David Scherer, I believe, is his name. Published a column, Scalia was murdered, but it's not what you think.
Yeah,
you want to find that, Daryl. That fits into your...
I have the book. It's going to be in my Elite Sexuality. And now it's not just an essay. It's going to be a book. And I've seen the Schroeder videos on YouTube where he goes around Omaha pointing out the different locations where he was abused.
Right.
He's a club right across the street from the police station.
He's suggesting that Antonin Scalia is not the last on the list, and that Warren Buffett and George Herbert Walker Bush are also in line for this treatment.
Well, why Bush? Because he knows too much?
Oh, no. He's been a history of sexual abuse. You must.
Transformation
by Kathy O'Brien.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, he was the first to initiate Kathy O'Brien's daughter when she was about 5 years old. It's an appalling story, Ben.
Oh, yeah, I understand. No. Yeah. As we said, this is the glue that holds the elite together, the kinky sexuality.
The pedophilia?
Yeah. I wouldn't call it sexuality. These are just crimes. Just incredibly
crimes involving
horrendous crimes.
Sex.
Yeah. And... It's based on occultic rituals, sacrifice.
You're a fantastic guy. I don't know when I've enjoyed an interview so much.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it more than you did.
You have a breadth of interest and a depth of knowledge that is completely refreshing.
Thank you.
I'm very eager to have you back. Do you want to mention a website before we part?
Yes, I'm on, there's my official website, University of California. You're not going to see anything but me standing there with a pimp cup. But I have a Facebook. Please check in on there. You know, and I post something new almost every day. I've been doing a series on abductions recently, all the way from ordinary abductions, quote unquote ordinary, to alien abductions. Right? What's that about? And that's going to be a whole chapter in my Elite Sexuality book.
Daryl, I'll have to have you back. Keep me posted on your work. I'll have you back. We'll feature you again to discuss it. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today, Daryl Hamamoto, thanking him for being here and all of you for watching.
Thank you so much.
Hi, my name's Gary King, and I've assembled the most formidable JFK team on planet Earth. We've got Dr. James Fetzer, Larry Rivera, who is the number one researcher in the world today when it comes to new research, and we've got Don Fox, who's not afraid to look a little bit deeper than anyone else. So if you're interested in what happened to the 35th President of the United States, then I invite you to our show. It's called The New JFK Show. And it's on YouTube. Go to Gary King YouTube channel, and we've got over 90 shows archived for you there. So if you really want to know the truth, and knowing that over 9 out of 10 researchers are working the other side of the street in a sea of disinformation, I pledge to you the truth about JFK. Go to Gary King YouTube channel and find out your true history.